This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Good morning, good morning, good morning. And yes, it's a Wednesday and we, as always, are on Bump and Beyond and talking parenting with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And yes, I think today it's actually coincidental because I was a little bit sick over the long weekend. Not seriously sick, a little snotty and and congested and everything. So I think today's theme of talking about common illnesses in children is fitting for it. Because coincidentally, yesterday when I was listening to the radio, someone was asking, do you often get sick? And if you don't get sick often, what is your secret? And honestly, I should have phoned in because I believe the secret to not getting sick is not having children. Because I feel, especially when, I mean, I'm a little bit out of it now. So it's not that often that I get sick, that I have to say, because my children are already 10 and almost 13. So there's a lot, I've built up an immunity over 10 years. Already, or 13 years already. But a lot of my friends also and colleagues and everyone that I work with, often especially with small children, they are a lot more sick and their kids are a lot more sick. And the more kids they have, the more frequent it is happening. And it's I really feel that they are incubators of germs and they're bringing it from school and from wherever they are and they're making us sick. So sick children, and I can remember it like clockwork with my own children. Year around March, then the snotty noses started. And then like clockwork, September, it stopped. And then we had a couple of months of wonderful bliss and wonderfulness. And then all of a sudden again, it started. And luckily now it's not the case anymore. So I'm giving you a light at the end of the tunnel. It will eventually get better. But I do have to say, it seems like after COVID, this has changed. I feel like people are just sick all the time now. There's no, oh, it starts in March and it ends in September. It seems like December is nice breeding ground. I was sick in December, now that I recall. I was actually sick in December. So it is just not, it's not nice. It is not nice. And once, I mean, again, my kids are older, so they can actually tell me when they're not feeling well. It is so difficult with a baby or a toddler to figure out, are they really sick? How sick are they? Because they can't tell you. So it's very, very tricky. And hence the conversation today. What are the most common kind of baby illnesses? When? What can we do at home? When should we panic? And maybe we should never panic, but hopefully we can avoid panic if we're having this conversation. But yes, we're talking about common baby illnesses and what we can do about it. As always, I do want you to share in the conversation if you have some remedies, how to avoid children when you have them. Maybe I'm kidding, obviously, because like I said, I think that's one of the biggest things is that children do have germs and sometimes it's unavoidable. But hence the conversation today. Please do send me a WhatsApp on 061-895-1019 and let me know. Are your kids often sick? Are you often sick because your kids are often sick? Or are you one of those super moms who, once your children are better, then you get sick? And you just push through it. Also share that. That would be a good one. Is it you're the one who always just has to push through it and kind of deal with it? Because you, as a mom, we can't really be sick. You still have to do all the daily grind of all those things. You can't just lie around. What do? Share with us your thoughts and insights on 061-895-1019. If you don't have the app yet for Chai FM, now is a good time to go and download it, because then you can interact with us through there as well. And you can listen to this and all our previous podcasts on the app or on chaifm.com. But as always, I bring in the big guns to talk about the issues that we're talking about, because as you can hear, I'm just blabbering around. It's my favorite thing to do, and hence why I think Kathy gave me this job, because she realized I can talk a lot. Joining me today is pediatrician and mom, Dr. Marietta Kombrink. Hello, Marietta. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Yolandi. It's nice to talk to you again.
Yes, yeah, so, like I said, it's difficult when babies are really sick or to know when they're sick, because sometimes, I mean, babies do cry for other reasons than being sick, obviously. What would you say? How would you know if your child or your baby is sick?
Okay, when your child is smaller, I think one of the first signs that you usually pick up is that your baby is crying more than usual. Baby is fussy or niggly, not sleeping as well as they used to, and feeding can often be a problem as well. They're not taking their bottles as they should be. They're not breastfeeding as well as they should be. If you have older children, toddler ages, then they want to be picked up all the time. They just want to be near you. They want to be on top of you. They want to spread the love and germs, and that's how you know something's off.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a good thing. Like I said to you, in the end of the day, definitely I feel children become a lot more like cryy when they are. But there's other things, obviously, that can also cause them to be crying a lot more and things like that. Would you say a fever is something that's always prevalent with illness, or is it not always like there will be a fever when your child is sick?
Not necessarily, especially if it's a virus or a bacteria that they've been exposed to before. They might have a bit of immunity against it, and then they often don't present with fever initially.
Mm. But on that note of fever, that's something I was actually wondering about, because I'm not always a very, I don't know, I've got two thermometers in my house. So I have one of those that you could like test the forehead, and then one you can test in the ear, because sometimes I feel like I put it on the forehead and then it's like very high, and then I put it in the ear and then it's not so high. So I take it in the average between that two, I feel, as it. Is there better thermometers than other thermometers that we can use? What would you recommend, a forehead one or an ear one or a butt one? There's a butt one as well.
Oh, Shania, no. The rectal thermometers.
Oh, there's a better word for it. It's a rectal thermometer.
Please don't use that on your baby. It will make them feel violated and scar you as well.
Yes, no, I agree.
We have actually picked up during COVID times that the distance thermometers that you use on the forehead to scan is not that accurate than compared to an ear thermometer. Now, obviously, there are pitfalls when you use an ear thermometer as well. The ear canal can be wax filled, and it's not 100% accurate either, but it's better than a scanning thermometer.
I thought it was just my feeling. But see, motherly instincts sometimes do like kick in that you know these things. But again, I'm like taking both and just taking an average for it. And then I'm like, okay, I think. because I was also one of those really, and maybe you can also, but you're a doctor, so maybe that changes. But I remember the first time my son had a fever, and I was lucky enough that he was 18 months when he had his first fever. But that time I had no experience of fevers except for what other people have told me. And I completely freaked out. Obviously, I gave him Nurofen at home. We rushed to hospital. And by the time I got there, obviously the fever had gone because the medicine had started working. But yeah, I was one of those people that really, really completely freaked out on how it is. Were you also like that as a mom? Were you also paranoid? Or were you a little bit better equipped with dealing with fever?
Oh, Yolanda Shem, I sometimes feel bad for my children, because I think when your mom's a pediatrician, you have to be really, really ill before you get any attention.
No, see, I like that. I like to have that perspective, and that people also know that Dr. Marietta Kombrink is also a mom, and she also goes through the same suffering. But clearly, it's like my children with sleep. I'm like very strict when it comes to sleep, and they shouldn't bother me unnecessarily. But yes, I'm looking forward to getting more into this conversation of what the common illnesses are with children just now after this ad break.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
Yes, if you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM. And this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And we're talking parenting. And today, specifically, talking common baby illnesses, how to know when your baby is ill, and how to respond. I think it's very difficult. And even my guest today, pediatrician Dr. Marietta Kombrink, has shared with us already that, you know, it doesn't always manifest in a fever necessarily. And there is signs to kind of look out for when your baby, because it is difficult. They can't tell you, I'm sick, I'm feeling not bad. I do have to say, though, doctor, on that note, is that also for me very interesting is, like, as children are growing older, I feel like almost always it is a stomach ache. It's like, it's always that, like, when something is going on, they have a stomach ache. Is that, like, is that a thing? Do they, like, is, are they really, do they have it? Because they don't always have a stomach problem. Obviously, sometimes it's something else. But is that a thing?
It's interesting that you asked that, Yolande, because I had to fetch mine from school on Monday because he apparently had abdominal pain. But there's an age group. It usually starts around about 3 to 5, it's most common, where children tend to become quite constipated, and it's diet-related. So they can really experience abdominal pain, but it's not necessarily due to an illness. It's usually due to constipation. And then you obviously have to gauge if they complain of abdominal pain, but 2 minutes later they're playing and eating an ice cream. It's probably not that serious.
Yeah, that's why I often had like probiotic tablets. That's like my placebo effect for my children. But yes, so on that note, though, is like now we've talked about how you can kind of identify when your child is not feeling well, especially when they can't verbally tell you what's going on. But what are, in your practice, the most like common illnesses that you have? Has it changed in recent times, like after COVID? I want to know that as well. Look at me all excited about sickness.
You're not incorrect if you say that we tend to see children that are sicker than prior to COVID, because during COVID time, we were isolated. So there are a lot of children that didn't attend creche, didn't have siblings or playmates over. So their immune system did not generate antibodies as it would have during normal non-COVID times. So we do tend to see children that are sicker than pre-COVID.
Oh, see? I'm like, I'm very observant and I didn't even realize it. So what do you say is like the most common things that you see that common children illnesses?
See, the most, especially during winter times, is still the common cold. Everybody has the sniffles, and like you said, it usually starts around about March. That's when our viruses pick up, when the temperatures start dropping, and it continues until around about September when the temperatures are rising again. So a common cold is definitely, that's why it's called the common cold. It's still very common. And then with our younger babies, especially those under a year, we often get a cold virus that progresses into the chest and causes a wheezy chest, and that we call bronchiolitis. So our younger babies are definitely more prone to contracting bronchiolitis. I'm sure you've heard of the RS virus. Everybody's always scared of the RS virus during winter, and that's one of our big bad guys. It affects children quite severely. And then we also see otitis media, which is an ear infection or commonly known as the blue ear. At the moment, there's a bout of conjunctivitis. That's an eye infection that's doing the rounds through. Quite a few scripts for eye drops going around. Gastroenteritis is also more common, but that is usually from now and continues through to the summer months. And then if your child is in daycare and creche, you probably have also heard of hand, foot, and mouth disease that also tends to spread like wildfire.
On that note as well, for me, a big thing, and I mean, I don't know if that's still like a common thing. My daughter had croup when she was, even just thinking about it, it's like the first time I heard that wheezing chest in the middle of the night, it was very scary. And I mean, afterwards, then once you know how to treat it and what to do, then you're a little bit more empowered through it. But I mean, the first time is croup still, because it also comes and goes that once your child has had croup, it feels like up until 3 years, it comes and goes all the time.
Yeah, if your child has had croup once, they tend to get it repeatedly. And if you're a mom and your child had croup, you are able to diagnose croup in checkers 3 hours down, because you know that sound of a bark.
That's true, yeah.
That and, really horrible. After the first bout, you should be quite comfortable to manage it at home. But children are often sicker at night. That's the irony, no?
Yeah, no, that's just because they're here. That's funny. but it's also now looking at all the your list of cold and RS virus. Okay, luckily, we haven't had the RS virus. Glue ear was also missing, but we've had eye infections, hand and foot. We've had gastro. So, like, I'm checking this list properly of hand, foot, and mouth disease was also for me a horrible thing that my daughter had. Luckily, it wasn't that bad in her mouth, because I know that some children really get it bad in the mouth and it's really painful. For me, it wasn't that bad. By the time she had it on her feet and her hands, then I think it would, the worst was over. With those type of things. But on the note of a cold and flu, let's say cold and flu, the difference, what is the difference between a cold and a flu?
Okay, so both are caused by a virus, but flu is caused by an influenza virus. So we have our flu vaccines that can help prevent influenza virus. And it changes every year. Usually comes out around about March, and you can have your flu vaccine, and within 2 weeks, you should have immunity against influenza. Colds are caused by other viruses. Colds often don't cause systemic infections. That you have a runny nose, a sore throat, it's limited to your upper respiratory tract. Whereas if you have influenza, you have body aches, you're tired, you can have gastrointestinal symptoms like nausea and vomiting as well, and the fever also tends to be quite high. Interesting, in children, if they do suffer from influenza, they can also present with muscle aches. So I've had a few cases of children presenting this year with muscle aches and myositis type pain after influenza.
Oh, see, you know, and it's, again, it's scary when your children can't verbalize those things for you and you don't know what's happening. If you've just joined me, you are on 101.9 High FM, and this is Bump and Beyond with me, your host, Yolandi Becker. And today we're talking about common illnesses in children. We're getting to the part now, what do we do once we've identified that they're ill? And I'm speaking to guest pediatrician, Dr. Marietta Kombrink, about this great topic, because it is scary, and often you really feel helpless as a parent if you don't know what to do and what to look out for and those type of things. So I think it's a valuable conversation. If you've just joined me, don't worry. Luckily, this will be available as a podcast on our website, highfm.com, that you can go listen to. And again, if you have questions for my guests, you can send them to us on WhatsApp on 061-895-1019. And if you haven't downloaded yet our app, please go and do it. We would love to hear your. That way you can interact with us all the time and listen to us, and you can listen to it live. It's really great. So, doctor, before we were now talking about identifying and then looking at those most common illnesses, but what is one of the first things, if you realize that your child is crying a lot, how do we respond? Should we immediately go to the doctor? Because that's always, even now, my children are 10 and almost 13, like I said, and still to this day, I'm like, should I go to the doctor? Because especially when it's on a Friday, then you're like, should I just go? Because now if I don't go today and the worst tomorrow, then I'm going to struggle to find the doctor. So when are we supposed to like go to the doctor? What should we do first?
Okay, so when you realize that your child is sick, I think it's very important to assess the situation. Monitor the symptoms, see what's going on. If they're vomiting, is the intake still more than the output? If it's a respiratory thing, are they breathing fast? Do they have difficulty breathing or an increased work of breathing? do you have a fever that's not responding to treatment? And if your child doesn't exhibit any of those symptoms, it should be safe to watch and wait and manage at home. But if it's your first baby and you have no idea what to do when your baby has a fever, you're more than welcome to contact your pediatrician, because we are in a supportive role as well, especially for first-time parents.
Yeah, and I mean, it is, again, I mean, I freaked out the first time and it was really an overreaction. But if your baby is now, if you see there is a fever, is it with smaller babies that you quicker should respond in the sense of go to the doctor or to the ER? When are you supposed to go to the ER?
Okay, if we are referring to fever specifically, if you have a fever that's not responding to treatment, I often have the question in my practice of how high should the fever be before I go to casualty? There's no amount. If you have a fever that's not responding to the treatment that you give.
But what, let's just establish that. What is a fever? What temperature is a fever? I mean, my thermometer goes red or yellow, so, or orange, and then I'm like, okay, that's a fever. But what is the temperature where it's classified as a fever?
Okay, anything above 37.5 is classified as fever. Up until 38, it's a low-grade fever. So there we don't necessarily need to give treatment. You can take off the child's jacket, monitor. Were they just driving in a hot car in the baby seat, they can also increase their body temperature. So with that, we manage them conservatively. We first see. Yeah. Above 38, we treat.
Okay. And then that means, should you give medicine or what should you do?
Yes, we usually start off with our paracetamol-based medications, and we can add on with the ibuprofen-based if they're older than 6 months.
Okay, so now, can I see you? I've already learned something a little bit more, and I feel a little bit stupid that I didn't really, I didn't know when a fever is, but I was like, low-grade fever. And I mean, that's also, I think, an interesting thing, because that I feel I know, is that your body's way of responding sometimes to illness, you shouldn't really just treat necessarily a low-grade fever, because it's also your body's way of fighting that. So am I right in that? This is that you should also give the body a little bit of an opportunity.
You are completely correct in saying that when your body increases the temperature, the viral replication slows down. So that is your body's way of trying to control the infection. And we often have a thing that we call fever phobia, where every single fever is being treated and your body doesn't have the opportunity to react.
Okay. So, yeah. So when, like I said, now we talked about when it is a fever, but again, now back to the initial question of when, what fever then should you be going? Is if it's a higher grade fever and you give medicine, how long does it take for the medicine to work?
If you're taking oral medication, the fever should respond within 1 to 2 hours. If you're giving rectal medication, as in a suppository, that should respond within 30 minutes.
Okay. And if it doesn't then get better after that and it's a high grade fever, is it then the opportunity to rather go to the doctor or to the ER?
Yes, then definitely go through, because you're not going to manage at home.
Okay, now see, this is now we're talking the nitty gritty of what to do, and not panicking like me with probably a low grade fever that I experienced. But that just shows you that as a mom, sometimes I was a psycho. I know that when my kids were, I absolutely know that I was overly. I'm better, slightly better with that. What are some like red flags that we can look out for when we talk like, okay, now I need to start panicking a little bit, apart from fever, obviously?
One of the things that always concern me is when a parent phones in and says that the baby is very lethargic, sleepy, they're struggling to wake them up. Obviously, that child's severely sick. Mm. And one of the other things is the inability to feed. If your child's not able to take in oral feeds, that child's going to dehydrate. Mm. So then please make an appointment.
How quickly does a baby start getting up? Because, I mean, they're feeding quite regularly. How quickly can they get dehydrated?
If your baby is still taking in a little bit of fluids with every feed, they shouldn't dehydrate in a couple of hours. But if they miss 2 or 3 feeds, they're already behind on fluids.
Okay, no, okay. So that's also good to know. And then obviously if they're also then throwing up or something like that, then it's even, yeah. And I mean, that was also, now that you mentioned also the lethargicness, I never experienced that with my children when they were babies, that they were lethargic. So I feel like even when they were sick, they were always just crying a lot and they were fussy and things like that. They were never like overly sleepy or something like that. But I can remember once when my son was then older, like 2 years or something. And I mean, a 2-year-old that just lays, that I was completely freaked out. And then I knew this kid is for sure sick because he was just lying on the couch and he was so, and I was like, okay, he's not talking crap. He really is sick. and that's, I feel like, a very telltale sign of very sickness. If they're like very, like, yeah, like you said, lethargic is the very good word. See, I'm learning here new vocabulary, rectal thermometers, all sorts of things I'm learning here today. Very valuable. If you've just joined me, you're on 101.9 High FM and we're talking common baby illnesses. Now, again, talking first response if you're at home, and we've talked a little bit already about suppositories and you talked about fevers and things like that. What are some of the things, because I know, like, what are the things I have always in my medicine cabinet? On that note as well, please do check your medicine cabinet on a regular basis because medicine does expire. And you shouldn't give your child, I feel, expired medicine. So I was actually this weekend again checking through my medicine cabinet. And there's a couple of things I always have in the medicine cabinet as a backup. One of those things, like I mentioned, was most definitely probiotic tablets, more for, and plasters. What do you say, what is some of those things that you should always have at home?
Well, I think first and foremost, the fever, because fever-free experience out, and the child is miserable when they're having fever. So we've covered that we prefer to start with our paracetamol-based medications first and then add on a ibuprofen-based medication. So definitely something for fever. If your child is having respiratory symptoms, you can check with your GP or pediatrician which decongestion is appropriate for their age group. Cough syrups, unfortunately, not very effective for kids under the age of 2. If your child is vomiting or having diarrhea, we do recommend having a rehydration solution at home. We are careful in children with antidiarrheal medication, but medication containing diosmectide that binds stool shouldn't be harmful in an acute infection. And then when your child is vomiting, also just check that the medication that you are giving is safe for the child's age group because they can have quite severe side effects.
I mean, but it's also sometimes, like you said, it's like difficult sometimes to give certain medicines, especially to babies. I mean, just thinking about it now and remembering, I mean, my son had severe reflux and I had to give him medicine for that at one point. And I was actually, even while I was doing it, I was like, is this really helping? Because I don't even feel it's going down properly. And it was really tricky to get them to get medicine.
This is Bump and Beyond with Yolandi Becker. Is brought to you with compliments of Dis-Chem Baby City.
If you've just joined me, yes, you are on 101.9 High FM. And I've been speaking to pediatrician Dr. Marietta Kombrink about common baby illnesses, how to deal with it, not to panic, what you should do at home, what you should have at home. So if you've missed this, please remember it's available as a podcast afterwards. But Marietta, before you go, I want to say doctor. She worked really hard for that title, so I'm going to use it. And we've got some comments here on WhatsApp that came through. First of all, someone said, Dr. Marietta is the best pediatrician. My kids, 4 and 1-year-old, have been sick this whole year. Eldest with swine flu twice this year. My biggest issue is to get rid of the congestion and all the slime in the chest. We use Zimplex every day, but no luck. As soon as one child is sick, we are all sick. I also had that. I told her. It's like, that's what happens. I don't know. Do you have some advice for that?
Yeah, especially if your child is under the age of 5, you do tend to struggle quite a lot to get rid of that phlegm because your sinuses are still developing.
Yeah.
You don't have frontal sinuses that are fully developed until the age of 5. So the children really, really struggle. And under the age of 2, there's not much that you can use to help alleviate the symptoms. So unfortunately, it's a watch and wait.
Yeah.
If your child has a lot of phlegm, we do often call in the help of our physiotherapists to try and get rid of that. They can also do sinus laser that assists quite a bit with the congestion.
That's really cool. And I mean, that's also, now that you mentioned also physio, like hitting out or not hitting, pounding out, I don't know. That's also a good like thing. Another last comment I would like to know, and I actually also would like to know this. I would like to know, is there a difference in the type of cough syrup to use for different types of coughs? Because you do see that, a wet cough or a dry cough. Is there actually a difference?
There is a difference, and the reason why we're saying that cough syrups are not as effective in children under the age of 2 is that you will often see printed on the bottle that a cough syrup is labeled as an expectorant. So if you are taking an expectorant, you expel the mucus. So that won't actually prevent coughing. That will help you get rid of the mucus, so you will cough.
Yeah,
and that's,
it will actually often help you to get rid of it.
No, that's often why people then feel that it's working, because I'm still coughing.
Yeah.
Because you're taking an expectorant.
Okay, so there is actually a difference between, sometimes I'm, especially with kids also, I don't really know if it is a wet or a dry cough. Sometimes you know it's a dry cough, and other times I'm just on the fence and I'm not sure. But on that note, unfortunately, we've run out of time. Marietta, Dr. Marietta Kombrink, where can people find you?
Well, as you very well know, Yolande, I'm practicing at Mediclinic Kloof Hospital, but they can follow me on Instagram. The handle is Dr. Marietta Kombrink, and on Facebook, Dr. Marietta Kombrink Practice as well.
Okay, great. And she's got really great, helpful tips. Also, during the, you can go like retrospectively look at her posts on Instagram. Really great tips on how to deal with fevers, different things. It's really quite helpful. So thank you for sharing your knowledge on your Instagram pages. It was really lovely having you, Marietta. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You too, Yolande.